This is the Inside Track podcast by the BVRLA. Join us as we speak to high-profile guests from across rental, leasing and fleet as they discuss their careers, react to the latest news and look at what may be coming in the future. Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us for the Inside Track podcast from the BVRLA. This episode forms the part of a new mini-series we're running across this podcast and the associated blog content on the BVRLA website. Called Shine a Light, the episodes in this mini-series are all about putting the spotlight on the people that make our sector a great place to work with countless opportunities. Our first episodes are in line with International Women's Day, which takes place every March. In our upcoming chats, you'll hear from a mixture of inspirational women from across the leasing, rental, broking and fleet sectors. We are kicking off with an interview from Lakshmi Morty, Managing Director at Arval UK and current Vice Chair of the BVRLA. Lakshmi is a true leader in our sector, and it was great to hear more about her career and her approach to leading effectively. Hi Lakshmi, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Inside Track podcast. So today we want to look at how to inspire inclusion in our sector and why diversity is so important. I guess a good place to start would be if you could give us a quick overview of a bit of your background to date, how you came to be Managing Director of one of the UK's biggest leasing companies.
Sure. So first of all, thank you very much for having me on your podcast, Adam. And this is a wonderful topic to be talking about, especially with regards to International Women's Day. But to be honest, I think this is an important topic we should be talking about every day in business and in the world. So a little bit about myself. I actually grew up in India, studied in France, moved to the UK, working with another large financial services company, and then joined my current leasing company, Arval, through an acquisition. So talk about welcoming diversity and inclusion. That's already an example of having to be welcomed into a new company through an acquisition. Mm-hmm. And I've been the MD of the UK business, the leasing business of Arval, now for 3 years.
It's fantastic. And I mean, in that time, what would you say have been some of the more positive moves that you've either enacted or you've seen more broadly in this space in terms of embracing diversity?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things from my own personal journey stand out. So first of all, I'm a firm believer that diverse perspectives make for a better outcome. And hence, it's very important to be inclusive, but actually to welcome diversity and see it as a positive. And that diversity, of course, is gender, is one very important facet of it. But I think it's everything else. It's age, it's a mix of ethnicities, nationalities. It could be neurodivergence. It could even be having somebody from a different background. So, you know, talking about myself, two particular things I would talk about is, as I mentioned, I grew up in India, but worked in Europe and was acquired into a new company, a French company, although I didn't speak the language or know anything about it. But I felt welcomed and included there for my professional competencies and my experience rather than some of the more obvious things that I could have been judged on, which made for a very good experience for me. But I like to think also that my company benefited from the experience I bought from my previous company, and I helped the process of that integration of that acquisition. So that's a great example of how a diverse experience or a diverse set of thinking skills can help a company. But taking it to a more personal level, I am a mom of two, and I firmly believe that people in their lives, in their personal lives, have different needs at different points in their career. And again, diversity and inclusion is about accepting people need some extra support at certain points in their life and giving it to them. So in my case, when I had two young children, I had a very good manager. She happened to be female, but she was a role model to me because she was a mom of two. And she herself was managing her work-life balance so that she could be the kind of mother she wanted, but she was also able to absolutely have a very, very challenging and ambitious career. And again, for me, it was having that positive role model at that point in life that helped me see how I could make that transition in that life stage and yet keep my professional ambitions.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny. I was going to ask about if there are any sort of specific examples or people that you sort of, you know, had that role model position for you. So
it's interesting because I think very often it is, if somebody is almost paired with somebody who's in a similar sort of life stage or they've been through it, so they have that immediate empathy. I mean, I guess beyond that, part of the challenge is ensuring people have those opportunities when their line manager is from a different background or doesn't have children or is at a completely different stage. Is that one of the things that you think we are seeing progress in, and it's the more cultural shift as opposed to if your role model is the right kind of person, you get the rub of the green?
That's a very important question. We shouldn't rely on chance to make sure that people have a manager who's in a similar life stage and hence is empathetic. It's about culturally and structurally making sure managers in the company understand the diverse needs of everybody. And again, we talk about motherhood as one life stage where people need support, but to be often, we're talking a lot about menopause at work right now. And that's a very important part of keeping women in the workforce, senior women in the workforce, that we don't lose them at a very valuable time in their life for them, but also for the company because of a biological phenomenon. And I know lots of companies are doing a lot of work on this right now. I am as well in our company. And many of our menopause champions are men, and they're men with partners who are far from reaching that stage even. So there is an interest in men. And this is a great example of somebody who's not in that life stage and will never be, but being keen to understand what women need at that point in their lives and supporting them. But it could also be, and a lot of what we do for including women do help other populations as well. So for example, a lot of us at some point in our life will need to become carers for aging parents. And that does fall upon men and women equally. So again, what we find is when we set up groups like parent and carer groups, while they may initially tackle the needs of young parents, the knock-on side effects and the benefits can be felt by people going through other caring responsibilities in their lives as well. So absolutely, I think it's about creating the right conversations, the right forum, the right training in an organization so we don't rely on chance occurrences, but we actually fundamentally build a culture that allows people to flourish despite some of their temporary needs in their lives.
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly valid point. And the examples you give there with, you know, men being involved on, you know, traditionally female, not tradition, but that sort of allyship, I think comes across quite often when people are discussing this topic. So I guess, is that something you found it just happens organically because everybody and or not everybody, people from across the organization can see the value? Or is it something that is being actively encouraged and sort of people are being pulled in as opposed to knocking on the door?
A bit of both, but I'd say you have to do the latter. You have to have a structured approach to it. So some of the things I spoke about, having a parents and carer group, having a diversity group, having a menopause group, these things need to be set up, but they also need to be more formalized. So for example, we have a formal menopause policy. Because sometimes people intend to do the right thing, but sometimes they need tools and frameworks to help them do that. So I think it is very important that an organization does do it structurally as well. But then the second part is, of course, the culture. Culture is a soft thing, and you can write down any number of policies and you can have any number of forums and groups. If you don't have the right culture and the right mindset in the company, these don't take off. So I'd say both are important, but you do need the structure, first of all, so people know what to expect and people know what they can avail of. And then culture is important so that these things don't stay on paper. They become real life breathing things.
Yeah, definitely. And when you mentioned there about it being sort of a soft thing, obviously businesses these days increasingly are all about sort of the numbers and the reporting and ROI success metrics. This kind of piece, you've mentioned some of the benefits that having this kind of positive approach brings, but are there ways that you can physically measure that or you look to measure it? Or is it more just the leadership pushes it through because they understand it's the right thing to do?
A bit of both. We do measure it as well. So we do, for example, the most basic things. We look at gender diversity at all levels of the organization. But we're also starting to measure diversity in other ways. So it is, and you need KPIs on that. You don't need targets. I don't think anybody should be targeting a certain proportion of any population to have, but it's important to have them measured. But I think it's also important to know, for example, at a recruitment stage, it doesn't matter who the eventual candidate is who gets the role, but it's important that we have diversity in the applications we get. So we do challenge ourselves. Typical gap, senior sales roles, it can be very difficult to get female candidates, but we challenge ourselves to try and get a few on the slate. And then after that, may the best man or woman win. So I think it is important to track them also with KPIs. And one thing you said, businesses increasingly are becoming KPI-led. I think we always have been, ROI, et cetera, have always been there. If anything, in my working career of over 25 years, I actually think we are much better now than we used to be. I think we truly wish to be inclusive of not just gender, but ethnicity, race, neurodivergence, sexual orientation. I think the business world is actually becoming better in the last few decades than when I first observed it at the start of my career. And I think that's a hugely positive thing for us all.
Yeah, no, I think that's certainly very fair observation, because you see it across all facets of, you know, sport, media, everything. It's becoming much more inclusive, and I think, you know, more people can see, you know, see themselves on television shows, in boardrooms. You know, there's definitely improvements being made across the board there, and I think that is just changing, you know, people's mindset, isn't it, moving away from the traditional and this is how we've always done things and how things have to be done. And sort of challenging the status quo. And I know when we caught up before, you were saying that you need that sort of non-traditional thinking, that non-traditional approach in this space specifically as well, don't you?
Absolutely, because I think our industry, so you know, when we talk about our vehicle leasing and rental industry, there is a notion that because it's related to cars and vehicles, that it's an automotive world. And there are some people who might think they don't fit in there. And I think that's a notion we should set right, because I think our industry today has a place for everybody. And we want that diverse thinking, gender, but we want all sorts of styles to come in, the extroverts, the introverts, you know, everything. Because today, I think some of the topics, the biggest topics we talk about in our industry today are about digitization, customer experience, customer journeys, customer fairness. It's about, you know, sustainability, how to get people to switch to more sustainable means of transport, electrification, how can we support people. And in all of this, I don't see any area where we don't need diversity. So whether it's gender, whether it's ethnicity, but I also think about diversity of thinking and diversity of communication. So again, we have these stereotypes sometimes that leaders behave in XYZ way. And again, it's interesting for me. I'm often asked, I'm a female leader at work, and have I had to change my style as I got more senior to fit into the business world? And I've always said, no, I haven't. I continue to be the person I am, which means that I perhaps raise my voice less than a traditional leader is meant to at the workplace. I raise it a lot at home, I assure you. But at work, I don't find the need to. And I think it's fine. I think it works. Again, I'm not somebody who'd ever profess to know exactly which car make is which one. I mean, I don't think I could recognize most cars if you took off the make and model, the branding from the car. But I don't think that stops me at all from being an effective leader in my industry. And I think that's what we want. We want everybody here to see that they could fit in and come in, so we get maximum variety of ideas.
Absolutely. And I've had most of my career personally has been in automotive. I had a couple of other sectors too, and you do always get those people that sort of see it as, you know, you're part of the club, and you know, at least historically you're a petrol head, which I'm sure is a dying term these days. And it's not about being part of the club or knowing what engine is what and what, you know, all the technicalities that cliche go with it. It's like you say, it's knowing your stuff, it's being good at that element of the role.
Exactly.
And particularly within, you know, your company and BVRLA membership more widely, it's very little of physically selling, you know, a car, literally nothing of that. It's the service of joining A and B.
Exactly.
And that's dealing with people. It's customer service, as exactly you said.
And it's data and technology, and what can we do with this new technology and data to produce a better product, a better service, a better experience. And I think that's the beauty of it, that we need, we don't need any one profile. We need several profiles to know what to do with these new challenges like data, technology, autonomous cars. You know, this is all new, and we're all equally new to these topics. So I think we all have an equal footing of contributing to the future of our industry.
Mm. Absolutely. And then I guess within that, obviously, you mentioned you've been sort of through different cultures, different types of roles. Within sort of our, you know, fleet and leasing specifically at the moment, where do you think is the biggest area for improvement when we're thinking about, you know, inclusion, and what can we do better, or what should we be talking about more perhaps?
I think like any other industry, we're doing a good job in changing, but I think we need to do even more. I think gender, we're all quite mindful of. I'd say our industry, but overall the business world, we're becoming more aware of gender as a key topic, and we're monitoring the KPI. We're not setting targets, and I think that is not needed. I think we're monitoring progress, and that itself drives action. I think perhaps what we could get better at is more ethnic diversity. I'm not sure we have enough. I'm not sure we do enough for social mobility as well. So I know certainly in our company, we're starting to think at how can we encourage social mobility in our local community? So we're talking about, should we set up apprentice schemes that privilege those from less privileged backgrounds so that we give people a chance for social mobility? And I think that is something the whole of the UK should be thinking about. And business has a role to play over here. So I think maybe ethnic diversity, social mobility, and the last one I would definitely say is neurodivergence. I think we're still in the business world very comfortable with expressing ourselves in certain ways. But I sometimes find in my company, and of course we have a certain percentage of people who will tell us openly or not so openly they are neurodiverse, but actually they're some of the people who give me the most interesting perspectives in our business. And we've got a couple of them in very senior roles, and we've got some of them in less senior roles, but I'm always amazed at how differently they think. Mind you, they're very intelligent. Some of them, again, without the risk of stereotyping, some neurodivergent people can be very, very intelligent, above average intelligence. And I think adding that into our mix gives us some very different perspectives. So I'd say gender, we're coming along. I think we're now evolved enough that we need to think of some of the other aspects of diversity.
Yeah, definitely. And I presume it's almost that the work done to support that gender piece paves the way to some extent, because a lot of the changes you've been talking to, you know, they've been very much cultural shifts as opposed to targeted just at gender. You know, that's obviously sort of the first cab off the rank, for lack of a better phrase, but that approach, that acceptance, that leaning towards less traditional leadership and those kind of pieces, they presumably give quite a good template to then apply to those other areas.
Absolutely. And again, gender, we've begun. I wouldn't say we've finished. We need to keep an eye on it, but I think at least we're talking about it, and that's such a great start. The rest, you're right. But absolutely, one form of inclusion and acceptance of diversity paves the way for the others. So you're right. It's almost like this momentum has started, and now let's continue it to make even more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess when thinking still within our, you know, our sector specifically, and more on that, you know, recruitment, getting new talent in, which I think most industries will say there's a problem with getting people in and attracted. Are there sort of any key threads or any trends that you're seeing within our valley, you know, the kind of people that are attracted to the sector or the kind of people that aren't, that we could maybe target?
Yeah, so it is always a challenge. And I think there are two strands. One is to strongly encourage growth internally. So like any other large company would have, I expect, within our valley, we have talent programs, and we have them targeted at various levels of the person's career. But we have some specifically for women as well, because we want to find those promising women early on in their careers and give them a recognition that they've got that potential, because sometimes that little nudge that you're good can do a lot for people, but also then give them tools, et cetera, to then make the most of that potential. So I think internally there is a strong role for talent nurturing, training, coaching, mentoring, sponsorship. All those things are very important to make sure that some of those constituencies that are less represented feel empowered to put their hand up when the next big role comes. And that takes time, but if you do it over time, then those people will grow, get nurtured, get empowered, they get the right mentoring, and more importantly, they get a sponsorship so that when a suitable opportunity arises, they're there. And then we do need to go out and hunt for talent externally where we lack it. So giving you a very simple example within Arval, with the increasing regulation from the FCA, for certain roles, we go and look not from the leasing industry, but we look from other regulated financial services industry profiles, because we're looking for a certain skill set. So again, over there, we again look for diversity of various kinds of things, but that's more about diversity of experience, where sometimes you have to go consciously and shop around. And we've done that in the past for certain roles. And some of our senior female executives in our company have come both through the internal route as well as the external route. So I think grow your own homegrown talent and keep an eye on them. But I think at times when we know we lack that pipeline, we should go out and look for it, because bringing external experiences in will make the company much richer.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess just to close, because I'm conscious you're very, very busy calendar and obviously gifted us so much of your time already. I guess it's that, like you say, it's a journey, and we're quite advanced on the gender piece, but there's more to do. With it being such a long and evolving journey, what advice might you give to sort of maybe our smaller members or companies that aren't as far along at the moment? You know, what's the first step? What's the first thing they can do that makes it manageable and starts a positive move?
I think the first thing I'd say is diversity is no more optional. It is mandatory. It's not mandatory from a regulatory perspective, but it's mandatory from a survival perspective. The world of today, and even in the smallest organization today, people come to work not because they want a job or a salary anymore. People are looking for more than that. There is a war for talent, and young people today are often looking for a purpose when they come to work. And so diversity is an important facet, because most young people today have very strong values, are looking for purpose. They're looking for a company and a workplace that inspires them. And so it's no more good enough to have an old whatever club of whatever shape it looked like. It doesn't work anymore. So diversity to me is not an optional topic. It's not a nice to have. It's a business fundamental we need to have. And I think it's accepting that and then having a conscious plan, not leaving things to chance. Things like culture, things like a talent pipeline don't come about by chance. You have to actively work on them. So yeah, I'd say it's accept that it's important for your business results. It's not just a nice to have. And then go about it consciously, because if you do the structural things, and then be very careful when you recruit people that they match the culture that you want to build in your company, then it becomes a living, breathing thing that takes off, and then you don't have to do very much. But at the initial stages, yeah, take conscious steps, set up groups, write policies, because that's important, and watch carefully your recruitment policy so that it reflects the culture you want to build.
That's fantastic. And I think that's a perfect note to close on. So thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to have you on and hear your thoughts.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. Keep an eye out for more content in the Shine a Light series over the coming days.
Thank you for listening. Please leave a 5-star rating on your podcast platform if you enjoyed this. If you would like to join as a guest, email digital@bvrla.co.uk.